Welcome to Leadership Reimagined. I'm Dr. Jane Lovis, your host. During each episode of Leadership Reimagined, we take a look at leadership from the vantage point of what it's going to take for leaders to lead their organizations forward into a new future. And in this episode, we're creating that new future. Today, I'd like to welcome Stan Gibson. Stan is all about making an impact, whether it's at home or in the workplace. We become alive when we see positive and intentional changes in our own lives and those we impact. Stan has a deep passion for motivating and inspiring seasoned and emerging leaders and their teams. His clients get excited as culture gets reset with purpose, intentionality, well-being, and results. If you're looking to pivot and elevate with positive leadership training, you're in the right place. Stan is also the author of Living a Rich and Intentional Life, where he shares how to create a life that has purpose and meaning while being a little bit selfish so you can be extremely selfless. Welcome, Stan. How are you today?
Jane, I'm awesome. I'm so excited. This has been a long time in the making, and I'm so tickled to be on your podcast. It's wonderful.
I am thrilled to have you here. And you know, you sent me the copy of your book, and I was so glad you re-mentioned it, because I get books from most podcast guests who are authors. You know, we're all real happy to share our books with other people, right? You know, and so I've been reading it. And it's like just so appropriate to where we are in the world today and the transformation that we need in business.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, they say never let a good pandemic go to waste. And so we all had a little bit more time in our hands, I think, in 2019, 2020. So use my time wisely, before work, after work, weekends. And at the time I was actually, I've been in the corporate world for the last 40 years. And so I got out of that about a year ago. I use my time wisely, because when people say, when did you leave the corporate world? Even though I officially got out and jump-started Oxygen Plus a year ago, everybody needs a plan B. And I started mine about 8 or 9 years ago. And I just became, even after working for Fortune 500 companies, being an entrepreneur, I had this passion around leadership. And I started reading more, and I started researching, and then I started doing keynotes around the country, and they were going well. And then I started coaching executives before work and after work. And so when people say, when did you leave? Even though I really never cheated, the company that I worked for, which was Wells Fargo, I never cheated them a day out of work. And I always told them what I was doing. But I think in today's world, leaders need to have that plan B. And because sometimes, especially in this environment, Jane, you can end your career on your terms, or maybe you don't. And so it's always important, I think, for you to know kind of where you're going, what you're doing. And I used, again, that pandemic time to do something I'd wanted to do for a long time. And that was just to accumulate all the research, the knowledge, the keynote speeches into a book. And as you read it, as you can tell, one of my mantras is, as leaders, we need to be a little selfish in order to be very selfless. And being a servant leader is really going to be, I think, even more important in the next decade as companies are looking for leaders.
I totally agree with you. And I think that as for leaders at all levels, that being selfish is not about I'm doing just for me. But you know, it's the old adage, flying, if they drop the air masks down, put your own on so that you can save someone else. If leaders, you can't tell me, and leaders that I've talked with, they're as burnt out as all the employees are. How can you be an effective leader when you're burned out?
No, you're absolutely right. And, the stress levels today, and that's what I'm finding for my clients. I know you are as well. I'm a really big disciple of just people-centric organizations. I think you have to invert the org chart, quite honestly, if you're going to go forward and you're going to be successful. You know, it reminds me of a story, if you don't mind, if I could just tell it real quick. But
sure.
When I was in coming out of high school, I was an okay athlete, and I got recruited to play football at Eastern Illinois University. And so I went there, and you know, I got hosted by a guy that, you know, he got drafted in the third round. You know, and you think, this is a great program. This is where I want to go play football. And that was kind of my aspiration. And so I got there to Eastern Illinois. Yeah, a lot of great players. We get to the end of that first year, Jane. We're 1-10, rated one of the worst programs in the United States. And I'm sitting there, I'm scratching my head. I'm saying, there's a lot of great talent in this locker room. There's a lot, I mean, really good talent. What's wrong? So obviously you don't go 1-10 and not lose your job. Well, they brought in a new coach and his name was Dr. Victory. Now, Jane, what, I don't know what you'd like to have for your tagline. Dr. Victory's a pretty good one, quite honestly. And so his name is Daryl Mudra. And the reason it comes to my mind is because Daryl passed away about a month ago. But what I remember about his leadership, which is so relevant to today's world, is he came in and met us for the first time, and we're in this small little locker room with weights and smelly and all this stuff. And he walks in and he kind of looks like Peter Falk. I don't know if you ever saw Columbo, but Columbo, you know, you thought he was the dumbest guy in the room, and he was really brilliant. And he walks in, he looks like Columbo, and he acts like Columbo, and he says, gentlemen, he says, I know nothing about football. And right now you got a 1-10 team looking at him like, well, that's really encouraging. And he says, no, he said, you know, the most success I've ever had was I coached my grandson's Pop Warner team and we won the league. And in fact, on Saturdays, I'm going to be sitting up in the press box because I can see better up there, and I really don't like to coach much. Well, now everybody's getting a little nervous, but what you find is he had the ultimate humility. He was not going to tell you he was something he wasn't. And what he said was, yet I'm going to hire the best coaches. I have an eye for talent. One of the gentlemen that had just graduated from Eastern Illinois about 3 or 4 years ago was his first hire. He was our offensive coordinator. It was Mike Shanahan, who's won 2 Super Bowls, and his son now is the head coach for the San Francisco 49ers. And he hired other coaches that have all had long terms in the NFL that were in their mid, you know, they were in their 20s, early 30s. The ironic thing about it is the turnaround of this program, because he had this humility. He hired good coaches. Here's the kicker. He said, but you, the players, are more important than any of us, because when you're on the field, we have no idea what's going on. Only you know if you're getting beat, you know if you're beating somebody, you know what works, what doesn't work. But unless you communicate that back to us on the sidelines, we don't know how to make in-game decisions. We don't know how to pivot. And so he put that responsibility back on us as the players. Then he said something else that I thought was just brilliant. Again, if you look at it from an organizational standpoint, it's all very relevant today. He said, you obviously didn't have a good season last year. Is there anything I can do to maybe help the morale, or just, you know, see what we can do to maybe have a little more confidence? And at Eastern Illinois, my freshman year, we had black shoes, white socks, white pants, a heavy blue jersey, a solid blue helmet, and a face mask. We could not have been more boring, Jane. The players all kind of, you know, well, be nice if we could maybe have some white shoes. And they almost said it under their breath. Back in the 70s, you have to realize that was kind of the new thing. Within 2 weeks, we had uniforms, silver pants, blue stripe, mesh jerseys. They kind of mid-drift to where the better looking athletes could show off their abs, silver helmet, this, you know, panther down the side of it. And lo and behold, white shoes. We jumped higher. We ran faster. We did all the things you want to. And the beauty of this story is I just said that we went 1-10 my freshman year. That first year he came in, Jane, we won the national championship from worst to first. And now I redshirted that fall, so I actually didn't get a chance to be on the field because I wanted to take care of myself and get bigger. And I had a lot of other issues I needed, but I got a first row seat to watching this. And you know, just the legacy. Not many people know about Eastern Illinois, but if you know much about football, you might recognize, you know, some of the legacy that it created. Tony Romo, Sean Payton was a quarterback there. Tony Garoppolis right now. So this legacy was all created back in the late 70s because this coach had the humility, and he had the eye for hiring talent, but he had the not only the humility, but he understood that to be successful, it comes from the players, and they have to be the ones to basically rise up, tell us what's going on, and help the coaches be better. So that's just, you know, a story that just resonated with me for probably the rest of my career. And I think that's where organizations have to go today, is this people-centric type of environment.
Absolutely. Because I love that. I have not seen an organization that grow and expand and deliver without people.
No, that's exactly where it starts. It's where it starts. And we're finding that out today. And boy, like I say, never let a good pandemic go to waste. I think we're all finding out from the pandemic, a lot of things have changed, and some good and some not so good, Jane. Right. I mean, you know, we've seen a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety. I was reading a book last night. I think the average, I was reading, this is a great book, but I think the average age for depression almost 30 years ago was 29. And now it's about 14 and a half. Oh. And so something's happening and we've got to get a hold of it.
I agree. And, you know, one of the things that I see and hear is there's such a lack of clarity and vision around what organizations are really trying to create. With your story with the coach, he got really clear that he was out to create a winning team and a well-trained, well-oiled team. And he couldn't do that by himself. You know, I look at some of the statistics, because sometimes I go, oh, I think everybody has a coach. And yet some of the statistics are like 86% of companies do not have leadership development programs. My background's in technology, as a technologist. And the number of bosses I've had and seen that were really good software developers, really, really good technical people, that then got promoted into being a manager. They had no clue what to do and nobody told them. It's like we're setting people up to fail and then wondering why they're failing.
Absolutely. One of the things that, you know, I'm helping clients with and in teams, exactly what you just said, Gene, we use a process called the Genius Portrait. Let me give you a little background on that. I don't know if you know Dr. James Land, but he was asked, this was back when they sent, you know, astronauts to the moon. And they asked him, they said, we need some kind of assessment that will tell us who the best astronauts are. In fact, we need to know who the geniuses are. We want to know we need the best of the best. So he spent a few years developing this assessment to find out who the geniuses were. Well, he did something really, really unique. He gave it to 1,650 preschoolers. And what do you think they scored on it? Scored a 98%. And then he took those same kids, those same 1,650 kids, and he gave it to them when they were 11 years old. Now they're down to 15%. And then not these same ones, but he gave it then to people that were in their 30s and they were at 2%. So where did we start to go, I guess, south? You know, we started to take dreams away. We started to put people into positions that they really weren't qualified for. Or, you know, I want Johnny to be a doctor. I want, you know, Susie to be a lawyer. I want, you know, we start telling people what they need to be and we start to take their dreams away. And I realized not all of us. I mean, I wanted to be a professional baseball player and that wasn't going to happen. But there is a range of who we are at our best. And this process that I use called the Genius Portrait, it's a derivative of Strength Finders. And if most people know about Strength Finders, there's 34 strengths. And if you put all these permutations of 34 together, I think it's, you know, you could come up with 32 million different variations of strengths, of personalities with those five strengths. But what we do is we take those strengths. And for example, like my signature strength is strategic. And all that means is that I filter a lot of options and I get to kind of the punchline pretty quick. Doesn't mean it's the right punchline. It just means I get to the punchline pretty quick. And Jane, you might be strategic too in your top five. But the thing about the genius portrait is we then dive deeper into that one strength. And we have eight sentences that you can pick from and which one resonates with you. Well, for me, my strategic is I connect dots very easily. Yours might be something different. But when we start to put these sentences together over the five strengths, we now come up with a paragraph, a very granular paragraph that starts to say exactly who you are at your best. I mean, where do you get your energy? And mine does. Mine starts off, I connect people and I connect dots. because one of the things is I'm also what's called a woo, winning others over. And so I have a big Rolodex of just acquaintances and colleagues. So I can connect dots and connect people very quickly. Well, that's great to know my paragraph around who I am at my best. But those same strengths, it's like a muscle. When it's under stress or fatigue, it becomes a weakness. And we call that kryptonite, if you know the story of Superman. Then we take each of those five strengths and we go through the same process to find a paragraph of who you are, maybe when you're under stress. And that way, we can have an idea of when you're at your best and when you're under stress. And I call it good Stan, bad Stan. I want to be good Stan as much as possible. And I'm hoping that's, I'll say 85% of the time, because we're all going to have tough days. But the thing about being in a team environment is if you know how people act and react when they're under stress, then you can say, well, that's not malicious. That's not personal. That's just, you know, Stan, you know, and I know he'll get through that in a day or two and he'll be back to being good Stan. So knowing who you are and who you're not is critical from a leadership perspective, but also from a team perspective. And I find, to your point, that's, we're promoting people without them understanding their swim lane. I liken it to, I want to be Michael Phelps in my swim lane. I want to not just go 25 or 50 meters. I want to go 100. I don't care if it's breaststroke. I don't care if it's freestyle, whatever. And can I get out of my swim lane? Sure. But I might only go 50 yards. I'm not qualified to go the other 50, and there's somebody else that can. Well, I want to line up with that person. That's the team I want to be on. So anyway, I didn't mean to hijack that conversation, but that's just how it lands on me, to exactly to your point. People need to be in the right swim lane.
Yeah. I am going to pause this for 1 second and go let the dog outside. Oh, I think I stopped it. I'm going to have to splice two of them together. It's okay. So I love that example, because, you know, I love assessments. I am always, anybody ever has an assessment, I just love taking them and seeing, okay, what does it tell me, and what insight does it give me in why I behave or do things the way that I do? Some of them are things that doesn't even matter. But what I love is, like you said, you know, when you know how you're going to behave when you've got it all together, that's important. But sometimes, like you said, it's even more important to know how you behave when you don't have it all together. Yeah. Because those are the times, that's when breakdowns in teams happen. If you know that, if people know that about you, and you know that about yourself, and you know that about them, like you said, you don't have to take it as personally. They're not doing it to us. It's just happening. And then it creates space to move past it.
Yeah. You know, again, you're absolutely right. You know, the one thing I often say to my clients is, if you're not good at home, you're not good at work. If you're not good at work, you're not good at home. So you really got to put your best foot forward, taking care of yourself as a leader, both personally and professionally, so that you're on your A game, because you can't impact others unless you're good yourself. I've got a client that I always start out, clients taking this genius portrait, but for this client specifically, I could just tell low energy, just had a lot of personal things going on in their life. And so I said, you know, I think we're going to go out of sequence here. And so immediately we started working on routines. We started working on sleep patterns. We started working on nutrition. You know, we started working on some things. And what we found was that over the course of 2 months, I mean, now she was bubbly and happy, and she was ready to now work on herself in multiple ways. But unless you feel good, unless you've taken care of yourself, do you have the energy to want to make some of the changes that you need to make in your life to be a better leader? So getting that science around, you know, what are the hacks around sleeping better? What are the routines? I mean, this person, you know, was probably getting up getting up in the morning, turning on the TV, seeing a lot of, you know, killings and this and that. And, you know, we just had to kind of rearrange a mindset and her narrative in order to put her in a position to be at her best and then start to learn how to be a better leader. So sometimes it's the physical aspect of it as well.
I know that from sharing with you before we started, having had foot surgery, that when things take you out, if you can, as a leader, especially when you can share it, not make excuses. It's not about making excuses. It's just, this is the reality. This is the way it is right now for this week. This is what I need to do to take care of myself so that I can come back. When you deal with things in that way, 90% of the time, people want to support you. They'll go out of their way to support you because they have an understanding of what's going on. It's the when there's no understanding. Why is my boss so crabby? And just every word comes out like it's an order instead of a request. One of their parents or somebody passed away, but you don't know any of that. You can't. There's no space for anything else. And so that being, it's also being a whole person with a life. Yeah. You know, leaders can be really good at pretending they have no life.
It's back to that authenticity. And you know, you're absolutely right. And if you even turn the tables a little bit, let's say you're a good leader and maybe it's the employee that's, you know, maybe they've lost somebody special or, you know, they're going through some relationship issues or things like that. I think that ability to get more personal in, you know, your one-on-one conversations. And I know there's a line you can't maybe go past, but I don't think we've come close to that line. I think we have to know, you know, is there something bothering you today? Is there something that I can help you with? And I know I was in the corporate world for 40 years, and I don't think I ever ended a meeting without saying, is there anything I can do to make your life any better right now? And, you know, normally you'll get the, you know, I'm good, but every once in a while you go, they'll come clean with you. And they'll say, you know, I've got some issues at home that I really need to tend to. And you may not need to go into what those are, but at least you have an understanding and say, if there's anything I can do to help. And I know I've worked with a lot of people that have reported to me in the past, and it was, they were under a tremendous amount of stress, you know, and they weren't sleeping well and they weren't this. And that's where we need, I have a saying, Jane, I say that leaders need to learn how to coach and employees need to learn how to lead. And I think that's important that leaders start coaching as opposed to telling, like you had said.
Oh, yes.
And I think that embraces employees to lead. And that's the inverted org chart that I think makes companies special.
I'm thinking back to some teams I've been involved with. And when I started working with them, they were so dysfunctional. They couldn't even, you could just... There's one team, you could hear the dysfunction, the craziness in their conversations. You could see it in their eyes. They were months behind on a project that they were supposed to deliver, that they had to deliver because it was a regulatory project. You know, the regulators don't say, oh yeah, sure. We'll come back in 6 months. No.
Christmas, enjoy yourself.
And they had not had good leadership, and the leadership just let them spin because the leadership, well, I don't know what happened with the leadership, why the leadership was the way it was, but it was that way. So we had to make communication safe for people to ask questions, to get the information that they needed and share information and be able to say, and this was a very highly educated group. And so, and I had to make it okay for them to ask questions that they didn't know the answers for, creating that safe space. And so oftentimes leaders don't create safe spaces. You know, I like to share that one of the biggest killers to innovation is, yeah, that's a really good idea, but.
That's a great analogy, the but. You know, I have a friend who's improv, and he coaches, but he does improv comedy. You know, you get up and you think on your feet. And I took one of his exercises. That's exactly to your point right there. I took one of his exercises, and I've led some team development starting with this exercise. And it's amazing because if I were to give you a sentence, Jane, and I said, it's sunny out there today, but I use that word and. Mm-hmm. And then you finished the sentence and you finished it and you said, and we kind of kept this dialogue going back, finishing our sentence in and, we'd have a great dialogue.
It expands.
But if I said it's sunny out there, but, well, now the conversation takes a left.
Yep.
And it never recovers. And so a lot of times with teams, I try to get them to, yeah, let's have a dialogue, but let's let's end this sentence in and somebody else take the baton and run with it. So it's exactly what I agree with you 100%. We get in a lot of trouble with that one little word.
Oh, that, yes, that is such a conversation killer. And we so often, we're so unconscious. That's the challenge, is so many of these things are such unconscious behaviors. Doesn't mean they can't be changed. And it's a real challenge to do it by ourselves, which right. is where coaching and colleagues and, you know, all of these things come in to play.
You're absolutely right. And it's one of the reasons I got into this profession. And like I said, I did it 10 years ago, but kind of officially hung the shingle out a year ago. And oh, it's just so much fun, because when you can see people start to make the breakthrough, you can see the transformation. Again, it's about that servant leadership. It's about that. It's not about me. It's about we. And when you see people start to make that shift in the joy in their life, it's just, you know, for me, it's rewarding, but for them, it's just, and again, that shift takes place at home as well as work. Mm-hmm. You got to get both of them right. I mean, I have a lot of my clients I'll take through. I have them tell me who or what's most important in their life. And you know, so we force rank those. And so I really want to know, I mean, you know, because I want to know where you're going to spend your energy, not your time, but where you're going to spend your energy. And if your spouse is first, or your faith, or your this or your that, let's go down the list and see where your career fits in. And let's make sure that we have force ranked who and what's most important in your life. And the only stipulation I have when I do that is I say, just please put you yourself as close to the top of the list as you feel comfortable. Because again, you've got to take care of you so that you can take care of everybody else below you on this list. And when we look at each of those areas, we might look and we'll just say maybe their spouse is at the top of the list. Okay, well, let's talk about what success looks like being a husband or a wife. Let's talk about what success looks like to you. We just 4 or 5 things. And when they write those down, then we take a look at, okay, well, what's current reality look like? Because when you look at success or a preferred future, and then you counter it with the current reality, there's a gap. Mm-hmm. And when you know that gap, you know what you're trying to solve for.
Right.
So trying to solve for those gaps in all the key areas of your life, you can maybe never be green in every one of them, although that's nirvana. But being yellow or green is where you want to be, because that's what makes better leaders, is again, being good personally and professionally. Then you can start to go out and impact others. And that's what leadership is about, impacting others.
Exactly. And that's what I loved about your book, Living a Rich and Intentional Life. And it's so funny, because the world works in the way the world works, and there's really no such thing as a coincidence. So it's not really a behavior. It is that I have recently taken on. And when I was reading your book, I thought, oh, this just really fits in with having a rich and intentional life, is looking at what inspires us. Because when we want, and this is critical for leaders also. If you're not inspired for whatever reason about the work you're doing, the business you have, the way it's going, how can you inspire your team and your employees? It's really hard to inspire. And so how are things going to get created if it's not done with inspiration, which is a really expansive energy? It's probably going to get done with just barely enough energy to get done. And I really, when I was looking at that, you know, where you talked about time and energy, because I got, okay, the reality is most of us spend 40 to 50 hours a week at work, because even if it's 40 hours a week, we're probably commuting. And I live in the DC area, so you've got those 1 to 2 hours a day of commuting. You're not going to get rid of that. What's your energy level? Look at the times that you've been really motivated and energized and inspired, and how much you get accomplished. And then look at the times that you've been demotivated and uninspired, and how much you get accomplished. You don't get accomplished. If time with your spouse is important, and you know that you want to spend, that's where you want to spend a good portion of your energy. And energy is actually within a big, big arena, something that we can create. I get that there's health issues and things that, because I've been dealing with some of that, that impact that. And yet when we're inspired, we create energy.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you bring up the spouse. I mean, like you say, we do. We spend 40, 50, sometimes more hours at work. It's just that. It's just that little thing. It's that little "I love you." It's that little text. It's that. This morning, I had a very early coffee, and I had to take off around 6 this morning. And when I got home, I saw my wife had already left, and she goes over to watch our grandsons for the day. And I saw her phone sitting on the counter, and I knew I was tight for time. But I picked up the phone, I got in the truck, I went over, and you know, just her seeing me walk in the door with her phone, as little as it was. That bought me, I think, a lot of bad stand for the next week. You know, I probably have a few bullets I can spend maybe not be in the doghouse quite as much. But it's just those little things that we do. You know, energy goes where attention flows.
Yep.
And so we have to always just, it doesn't have to be much. It just has to be those little things that where you put your energy. And that's why I have people force rank, because you got to keep your eye on what's most important in life. And we all know that, you know, life ends not always on our own terms.
Right.
And you never want to look back and have regrets and say, oh, I'm sure glad that I put in those extra hours. I'm sure glad that I, treated people, you know, poorly. You never want to do that. So you've got to be rich and intentional about how you do life. Mm-hmm.
Intentional is one of my favorite words. Because it's, I have a tendency, I can get just going, you know, it's the word that pulls me back and asks, why am I doing this? Am I just doing it because it's habit? Or am I being intentional about what I'm trying to do and what I'm creating? We're always creating. Is this the life that I want to create? Are these the relationships I want to create? Are these the kinds of relationships that I want to create?
Right.
You know, we're always creating relationships, but are they the kind? Are these the people that we want to stay in those positive relationships with?
You know, it's a great point, because, you know, I do have a chapter in my book on relationships. And, you know, I guess I wasn't aware of this until, you know, a few years ago, doing some research and reading some books. But what I realized was that, you know, I can tell you all the science around eating well and sleeping right and, you know, hydrating and all these physical things. And, you know, it can help you live, you know, 20 to 30% longer. What I didn't realize was that relationships, broken relationships, poor relationships actually reduce your mortality by up to 60%.
Oh my God.
60%. And, you know, they say you can die of a broken heart. Well, you really can, because when you have poor relationships, your blood vessels start to restrict and you start to have a lot of things that really cause it harder for blood to flow and get to your heart. And so when you start to go through these things, you start to realize that, wow, you know, we go back to our conversation we had 10 minutes ago. When somebody that maybe reports to you, or, you know, somebody's having a bad relationship and they're just not on their game at work, well, physically they're not on their game. Mm-hmm. And that's when you need to understand that and maybe create a little grace. Well, definitely create some grace and create some compassion and just say, okay, I get it. How can I help? And then we're back into that story there as well. So relationships are, you know, and to your point, we can't always, especially with Thanksgiving and Christmas coming up, we're going to be sitting around the table with, you know, some uncles, aunts, cousins, whoever, that, you know, they're going to be a little trying on our mental well-being. But that's okay, because, you know, it's, you do have to learn how to be very specific about your relationships. I've had to limit some of my relationships in the past, mm-hmm. and just maybe not take those phone calls, not follow up on those emails, and, you know, or shoot straight and just say, if we're going to be in this relationship, you know, as a peer, I've got to put some boundaries around it. And I, you know, because positivity, you know, for some people, if their strength is positivity and strength finders, they'll just be drained. I mean, they'll be emotionally drained just by having one person in the vicinity that has that negative, those negative vibes. So you're absolutely right on those issues. And I appreciate you bringing up relationships and picking the right relationships.
Well, Stan, we're just about out of time for today. This has been such a great conversation. What last tidbit, piece of information would you like to share with our listeners?
we've covered so much ground, and, you know, just take care of you. Again, you've got to be a little selfish to be very selfless. Don't look at that as a bad thing. I mean, focus on your routines, focus on your nutrition, focus on the little things that keep your head, your heart, your mental well-being. You know, just be healthy, take care of you. And sometimes that does take a coach. It takes a friend. It takes somebody. Don't be afraid to reach out. A lot of people are under stress right now. Don't be afraid to reach out and just enjoy this wonderful time.
Oh, thank you, Stan. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And may you all live a rich and intentional life.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us this week on Leadership Reimagined. I encourage you to take something that you heard today and apply it in your business. The key to progress is action and sharing. I'd love to hear what you accomplish. Email me at jlovis@lovisconsulting.com and let me know. Speaking of applying it in your business, if you're struggling or looking to expand your leadership skills, let's talk. You can go to lovisconsulting.com. That's L-O-V as in Victor, A-S, consulting.com, and schedule a quick call with me. We need powerful, strong, compassionate leaders to solve the challenges we are facing today. Please subscribe on your favorite platform and share with your friends and family. Thank you for supporting us as we cause and expand 1 million women leaders in tech by 2030. Have a great week. And I look forward to seeing you next week.